You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Caudette. The U.S. Supreme Court last week made an historic decision when they ruled that the 1964 Civil Rights Act protects gay, lesbian, and transgender employees from discrimination based on sex. And then another decision from SCOTUS. The court blocked the Trump administration's plan to dismantle an Obama-era program that has protected 700,000 so-called dreamers from deportation. So, what do these rulings mean, and will they have an effect here in Idaho? University of Idaho Law Professor Shakira Sanders is joining us live today to talk more about this. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Shakira, let's start with the LGBTQ decision. You know, a lot of people are calling this historic, surprising. Why those words being placed on this decision?
Well, one, this is a decision. It's called Bostic versus Clayton County, Georgia. So that will be the official name of the decision. But it does involve other sort of claims and sort of affects a lot of other individuals. What this decision essentially said is that you cannot fire an individual based merely on their status as an LGBTQ person. In effect, what the court has said is that Title VII under the Civil Rights Act, as it uses the term sex, that includes gay, lesbian, transgendered individuals. So what it does is it opens the door and it makes clear that the door of federal civil rights law is open to LGBTQ persons in this country.
So and then beyond,
that's the initial sort of thing that the decision does. But I think the repercussions are much, much greater than that.
Okay, so talk about that. Like what those repercussions will be.
Well, one, there is a lot of tracking between certain elements of civil rights law and the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. So this term sex or gender, as it is understood under equal protection jurisprudence, not a federal statute, but the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, sex gives you a protected status. It's called a suspect classification status. It means that the court's going to look at a law that sort of singles out people based on sex at a much sort of stricter way than it would look at some other types of classifications. So one question is does this term sex for purposes of equal protection also include LGBTQ persons? And, you know, there's not a whole lot in this decision that would tend to indicate to me that the answer to that would be no. So it could very well be that this decision is the first step towards the court telling us that a person's status based on LGBTQ status is just as protected as gender in the equal protection space as it is in the civil rights statute space.
So with that, Shakira, there are many conservatives, especially, you know, many religious conservatives who are, coming forward and saying this will affect our religious freedoms. What are your thoughts on that argument?
Well, one, civil rights law has quite a few exceptions for religious institutions, right? So if you are a church, then you're generally exempted from federal civil rights law. In addition, there is a doctrine under the First Amendment, the ministerial exception. So if you're working for a religious employer in some type of religious capacity, then there could be things under the First Amendment that gives you exceptions as well. But beyond that, we have to remember that many faiths and many religions have doctrines that would be distasteful, that we would consider discrimination. For example, if you go back to the opinion, the original lower court opinion in Loving versus Virginia, which is a famous U.S. Supreme Court case that says you can't restrict marriage based on race, right?
Mm-hmm,
if you go
right.
to that Virginia judge's decision, he did not have anything to say about the Constitution. He didn't have anything to say about science. What he said was that God did not intend individuals to procreate outside their race. That is what he wrote as his rationale. So the court didn't seem to have a whole lot of trouble there, sort of, you know, making it clear that religion is not a basis for legal decisions. Here, I think that because there are existing exemptions for religious organizations in federal civil rights law, and as the court interprets the First Amendment, I'm not quite sure if there's something special with regards to religion and sexuality that's any different from religion and race, if you get my understanding. I don't mean to sound coy.
No, not at all. I did not get that. So then I'm curious, because mm-hmm. we now have Governor Little, back on March 30th, signed right. into law, really two anti-trans laws
mm-hmm.
in the
mm-hmm.
state of Idaho.
Yeah.
You know, so one being that you cannot change your gender marker on your birth
right.
certificate.
Right.
The other being that women basically have to mm-hmm. prove that they are biological women in order
yeah.
to play sports in high school mm-hmm. or in college. How does this ruling from SCOTUS play into these laws on the books in Idaho, or do they?
I think that this decision is going to be extremely important for the litigation going on in Idaho over the transgender athletics bill. One, because a lot of athletics is ruled under Title IX of the same statute. So it
oh,
is
okay.
very likely. It is very likely that if the term sex under Title VII means one thing, it's going to mean the same thing for Title IX, right? And
right.
and it's going to mean the same thing for any part of the Civil Rights Act, unless Congress does something to change it. So to the extent that federal civil rights law is implicated with Idaho, and of course it is because of all of the federal funding that everybody receives from the federal government for education purposes, I think it's just going to be very difficult to say, hey, we can single out this group. In addition, and I should make clear when it comes to this particular litigation, I am a member of the ACLU of Idaho Board of Directors, and I am serving in a temporary capacity as a member of the National Board of Directors. So I should disclose that when discussing this case.
I appreciate that disclosure.
But I do think that one other thing for the birth certificate litigation, you, of course, also have the issue there of just equal protection, right?
Right.
And so that's where the equal protection end of this could come along. We could very well see federal courts agreeing on certain questions. And if that's the case, I think Idaho is going to have a lot of difficulty justifying its both of those transgender bills.
Was it, I mean, I guess part of the surprise in this was it was a 6-3 ruling. Two mm-hmm. of the more conservative justices, mm-hmm. ruled in favor mm-hmm. of this ruling.
Right.
And that seemed to be quite surprising for people.
Yeah.
But in your opinion, as a legal scholar, was it really, or is it these justices looking at the Constitution and having to uphold what is in the Constitution?
So this case is has sort of a little bit of, I think if you look at it in context, and that's what I try to do here.
Mm-hmm.
So in June of 2018, so about 2 years ago, we had one of Justice Kennedy's last decisions before his retirement, and it was the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, right?
Right.
And if you remember, that was the case where you had the individual who didn't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding. He was sued by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, and the U.S. Supreme Court ultimately said, hey, we don't think you guys respected this guy and his religious beliefs enough, so, you know, we're going to sort of send the case back on that. If you look at that opinion, it starts off with a whole lot of, hey, you can't discriminate based on LGBTQ status. Hey, we've got to respect people. We've got to respect gay marriage. Hey, we know all this is true. And so to some extent, if you look at Masterpiece Cake Shop and look at the judges who agreed with that part of Kennedy's decision, it included Roberts and it included Gorsuch. Hmm. And so to some extent, if they had come back in this case and said, hey, you can discriminate against an individual based on LGBTQ status, then I think that that would have implicated their votes in this previous case, right?
Right, okay.
Also, you know, so it's not just, you know, why would they just all of a sudden change their minds like that on such a key question? And so here, this decision really is saying you can't fire people just based on LGBTQ status. So what this case does is sort of affirm portions of Masterpiece Cake Shop, but it tended to be those portions that everyone skipped over in that opinion to get to the, oh, this guy's religious beliefs were not properly respected.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with University of Idaho Law Professor Shakira Sanders about some recent Supreme Court rulings. I want to shift gears now, and I want to talk about the DACA or the Dreamers Act. So tell us what was, first off, going on with this, because this was an Obama-era ruling, I guess, implementation, and then the Trump administration was rolling it back.
Mm-hmm. So this is another case with some rather complicated history. One, the history is complicated on the issue of DACA from when Obama was president. And if you remember there, we had a case that went to the Supreme Court, but Justice Scalia passed away. So we ended up with an 8-8 court, which meant that if you have a tied decision, then the lower court decision stands. One of the cases that ended up tied was a case out of the Fifth Circuit on whether DACA was constitutional as implemented by Obama. And so so that was one sort of prehistory thing with this case that we have to remember. Two, we have to remember that last year the court told President Trump, we're going to uphold this, quote, Muslim ban, right? Or this executive order. Now, you remember there, the court wasn't looking at the original executive order that Trump had signed. They were looking at version part 3 or 4 that Trump had signed, right? That had a lot more procedural things in it, and that really cleaned up that original one. Now, if you think about the time from which the court told President Trump, we're going to approve this version 3 or 4 of your executive order, what else has happened? Well, you've got the issue of the child separation policy at the border. And that is one where the federal government for the last several months has been in federal court confessing that they have misplaced children and with their parents, that their record keeping was not spot on. And that it may very well be that we are unable to reunite some of these children with their parents. And so I think from a practical matter, what the DACA decision says is that, hey, we think the way this program ended didn't have enough rules, right? It didn't even follow the basic procedures. I think some of the basis for that decision in terms of context is the way the president has handled his immigration policy.
Do you see an impact in Idaho with this ruling?
Well, I certainly think it's going to. Well, one, let's remember the Supreme Court did not say, hey, President Trump, you can never end DACA.
Right.
I think it's more of go figure out how to end this way in a way that will follow the Administrative Procedures Act. And so, one, I think that kind of puts a lot of states on hold because there's nothing really in place. And it's not like Idaho can take over federal immigration on behalf of the federal government, right? The court has already told states you can't do that.
Right.
Two, with an election coming up, I think it's going to be very difficult to sort of ram any new immigration policy, mainly because of public opinion on DACA seems to have swung very much in favor of DACA recipients. And so in light of all of the social justice movement that we see in this country, I don't know if the federal government wants to add this on top of, you know, police violence. Right. And I should say police and private citizen violence against Black and brown people in this country. And so I think this may have been, and again, I don't have any inside scoop on the court. No one in Washington, D.C. is calling me with
tips. They're not?
No, they are not. but I would suspect that maybe from the court's perspective, whatever leeway they were willing or whatever sort of assumption that the government would normally have that its procedures are properly in place, I don't think in the immigration context the Trump administration has proven any of that for the court.
Any other cases that you're keeping an eye on with SCOTUS right now?
So there was a huge case that was decided in April, late April. It's called Ramos versus Louisiana. It, too, is a Gorsuch decision. This case declared that criminal juries must be unanimous in order to convict. This is a huge decision, and I think it's been somewhat overlooked. One, it sort of completes this revival of the court of looking at our Bill of Rights and saying, hey, these apply against states in the same way they apply against the federal government. So for decades, the court has said, hey, it's okay if you have a 10-2 decision or like a 9-1. So now that the court is telling all criminal courts around the country, your verdicts have to be unanimous. I think this is important, too, because it heightens our awareness that our civil jury right is not given the same respect as our criminal jury right. And therefore, I think that it could be interesting to see if people turn their attention to whether or not the civil jury should apply against the states in the same way as the criminal jury. And I write in that area. So for me, I'm super excited. There was a case decided today, Liu versus Securities and Exchange Commission, which allows the SEC to award certain types of equitable relief. I'm not a securities person, but one of my colleagues here, Wendy Kucher, who's a associate dean and a distinguished professor, this is certainly up her wheelhouse. So I'm super excited to chat with her about that opinion. Of course, I'm waiting to see what the court tells us about funding for religious schools and about Louisiana's regulations on abortion.
That is a fascinating. I was just reading about that the other day. That is really interesting and a one to follow. So before I let you go, Shakira, I'm just curious, what has it been like to, you know, to honestly kind of get a front row seat in a way to these decisions because, you know, they're doing it over Zoom and all of that. And you know, it's just never been done like this before.
Well, one, I think the importance of Zoom etiquette and your mute button was definitely demonstrated when we heard a toilet flush during U.S. Supreme Court arguments. And I don't know about anybody else who was listening, but I almost lost it.
Now you just want to know who was flushing that toilet,
now
you know?
You just want to know who's flushing the toilet, right? Like, seriously. And it's got to be, like, the justice's worst nightmare, right?
This is of course.
Why they refuse to ever be on camera. Of course, you probably have to be a lot younger and very good-looking to be a U.S. Supreme Court justice if we had to put them on camera. I think, you know, the emerging nature of technology, we also had the court suspend arguments, 2 months worth of arguments this term, and sort of did a jam-packed session in May. So it very well could be that we see late opinions this year because of that. I'll say, though, Our federal courts moved to an online system of filing and things like that long ago. And I say long ago when I was clerking in federal court, which is almost 20 years ago. So luckily for the legal profession, if you're in federal court and in most states, Idaho has moved to an electronic filing system. You could still get your filings in, right? You didn't have, you don't have to go down to the courthouse for that stuff anymore. And that's fantastic. I still don't know what that means for the people on the other side. Were people in jail longer than they had to be, right? Were people able to show up for court via Zoom? And I know that we saw some of that in terms of arguments. It's starting to make me wonder about the future of courts, right? I, if I have a court date, do I have to drive down there or can I just go in the break room at work for 10 or 15 minutes, go on Zoom cell phone and testify?
And how does a jury trial work?
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And can you have a Zoom jury, a jury via Zoom? So I think, and what we call them Zooms, right? And so I think there's a lot for us to think about in terms of technology and its benefits and its burdens. But I have found myself just reading more about how courts have tried to become more access for low-income people or people who are just not familiar. And I've really been fascinated by that scholarship and those perspectives, right? Can the everyday man access our courts in a quarantine?
Right, where that is their right to be able to access it.
Exactly.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your insight and your perspective on all of this. We've been talking with University of Idaho Law Professor Shakira Sanders. Thanks so much.
Stay healthy and safe, everybody.
You too. Up next, connecting the dots between racism and the healthcare system. And also, we should tell you, the number of COVID-19 cases in Ada County went up significantly last week. As of today, there are 1,256 cases in Ada County alone. Central District Health Department will be holding a news conference today at 1 p.m. right after Idaho Matters, and we will be running it live right here on Boise State Public Radio.